Tonight, I'm going to talk about a fundamental choice in life, love versus fear. And I'll say, first of all, you know, it might strike you a bit funny, this particular dynamic. Most people, you said, what's the opposite of love? They would say hatred. Hatred is actually a slightly more complex emotion. Love and fear are primary emotions. Hatred is actually anger plus fear. So it's a bit more complicated, but in many ways, fear is the polar opposite of love. Energetically, love is a movement in our energy field that opens us up, that impels us toward curiosity, toward exploration, toward connecting with others. It's a very calming energy. It's an energy that allows me to quiet myself and get in touch with my core so that I can live from a wiser place. Ultimately, it is an energy that moves me past the boundaries of ego and connects me with my highest nature. Now, in Buddhism, they would say the highest nature is Buddha nature. In Christianity, the highest nature would be, you know, something like our union with Christ. But it is a movement that ultimately brings us beyond ego. It's a cliche to say, but it's actually true that love is the strongest force in the universe. And insofar as I open myself up to love, I allow myself to be, as it were, empowered or moved forward by this incredibly powerful force. Now, fear is a movement in the opposite direction. Fear contracts the energy field, closes us off, makes us more narrow, binds us to the ego self. And there's a lot of toxic energy in fear. And so really we're, in a way, we're kind of poisoning ourselves by holding a fear state. It's the paradox of fear that it harms the very life it's pretending to protect. So before I go on, I just want to pause and say it's tricky because we're talking about a dichotomy tonight, love and fear, and love is the good thing and fear is the bad thing, you know. But of course, fear is natural. We all experience fear. I don't want this talk to be misconstrued as if you have fear, then you are a bad person or you are doing something wrong, you know, because good and bad, right and wrong are such powerful dynamics in our culture. I far prefer the view of Buddhism, which essentially says that something like fear, it's an unhealthy state. It's a kind of, as it were, a sickness of the emotional system or a sickness of the energy system. And for this sickness, we need medicine, the medicine that Buddhism provides. And to overcome fear, it's a healing process. And here, healing is always slow and it's a long process and it doesn't move as fast as the mind wants it to move. It takes its own rhythm, you know? And it's, you know, it's very funny because I think part of us hears that, you know, if we hear something in as, you know, you're doing something wrong, then we think we should stop it immediately, you know. Whereas, you know, we can't really stop fear immediately because we need to go through a healing process to bring fear to an end. So it's very important to be patient with yourself around these issues. So why do we have fear? So here I'm going to talk a little about biology and the brain. So we have a system in our brains called the sympathetic nervous system. And the sympathetic nervous system is designed for times that we would be facing, say, you know, 30,000 years ago before civilization, when we're living out in nature, times that we would be facing a direct physical threat. So suppose, you know, I'm going through the forest and I come upon a tiger, or I'm at the bottom of a hill and all of a sudden there's a rock slide coming down the hill toward me, you know? So immediate physical threat. And so what does the body do? Well, first of all, it kicks in a lot of adrenaline, which energizes me. It diverts a lot of blood from the inner organs to the outer musculature. So my muscles get, you know, sort of charged up, ready for action. I'm ready either to fight or to flee, you know. It makes the breath very shallow and quick so that there's a lot of ready oxygen in the body. It actually shuts down digestion and it shuts down immune function, because at that split second when I'm fighting for my life, digesting is not that important, and fighting off a cold, something like that, is not that important, you know. So the body makes this calculated guess that, you know, it's going to divert all the resources simply to keep me alive in that moment, you know. Thinking becomes incredibly constricted, incredibly black and white and narrow, you know. The moment that I'm facing the tiger, or the moment that there's a rock slide coming down the hill toward me, that's not the time for me to think, gee, what was that poem about, you know. Like, it's a moment where I have to be really on task, fighting for my life, responding immediately to the concrete things in front of me, you know. And in the natural world, this is perfect. Because in the natural world, whatever that moment of danger is, it's only going to last very shortly, you know. Either I'm going to escape from the tiger or it's going to eat me, you know. Either I'm going to escape from the rock slide or I'm going to get wiped out, you know. I'm not going to be in that fear place for long. And of course, if I escape, then I have the rest of the day to relax and calm down, you know, because, you know, the natural world all around me, and I don't have a news feed and a cell phone and everything else to, you know, cause me any kind of stress. And so the other system, the parasympathetic nervous system, does the exact opposite. The parasympathetic nervous system relaxes our musculature. It sends blood away from the muscles toward the internal organ. It lowers cortisol, it lowers adrenaline, it lowers all those rev you up kinds of chemicals in the body. The breath becomes deep and slow, the heart rate slows down, immune function is enhanced, digestion is enhanced, libido is enhanced, you know, all these good things in the body. And we're really designed by nature, we're designed very carefully by evolution. So to have most of our time, like, in other words, most of our day should be in the parasympathetic nervous system. And there should just be those rare moments when we're in sympathetic arousal. Now, fast forward to our modern world. You know, of course, we still have this nervous system and this whole, you know, hormonal system that is uniquely designed for the natural world, but we're not in the natural world anymore. We're in 20th century America. And suddenly we're in a situation where fear is being raised by all kinds of things that are not physical and not immediately in our presence. You know, things like global warming or international tensions, or, you know, this or that party is going to win the election or lose the election, something like that. Or even COVID, you know. I mean, COVID is a physical threat insofar as it can affect my body, but it's not a physical threat in the sense that I can, like, physically fight it off or physically run away from it, you know. And so it's not a threat for which the sympathetic nervous system is designed. You know, there's all kinds of work scenarios, that sort of thing. You know, the boss says, you better get this in by Friday or else, you know, that sort of thing. And then we, you know, we get a charge of fear. And the paradox is that our body really doesn't know. When it gets fear, it charges up that whole system. So my muscles get ready, my breathing gets shallow, my digestion shuts off, my immune system shuts off, you know, all of that happens, but there's no physical threat. There's no place to run to where there's nothing physically to fight, you know? And that state is called stress. Stress is the inappropriate activation of the sympathetic nervous system to a non-physical threat. And so, again, if I'm in this state a long time, if I'm just spending hours and hours in the place of fear, well then, among other things, I'm shutting down my immune function. I'm shutting down my digestion. I'll probably wind up with digestive problems. I'm opening myself up more to getting a cold, something like that. It creates all kinds of toxins in the body to have that much cortisol and that much adrenaline constantly going through my body. So again, it's this paradox that fear destroys the very life it's trying to protect. And so, how do I want to say this? Again, I'll say just, you know, take another deep breath. If you're aware of, you know, you're a person who carries a lot of stress or carries a lot of fear, be very forgiving with yourself. Breathe deeply. I think I'll say that it's funny because if you think of say a person who's walking around in anger all the time and just expressing anger to everyone, you know, Buddhism would say that's a problem. Christianity would also say that's a problem. If I'm walking around 24/7 in anger, being angry to everyone I meet, something's off balance there. Something's wrong with that, you know? If my life is completely consumed with lust, if I'm looking at, you know, every woman's a possible sexual object and I can't stop thinking about it and this sort of thing, again, Buddhism is going to say there's a problem with that. Christianity is going to say there's a problem with that, you know? But contrast that to fear. If my whole life is in a place of fear, Buddhism is going to say that's also a problem. It's just as much of a problem if you're walking around in anger all the time or in lust all the time, or you're walking around in fear all the time. Now, Christianity has a more mixed message. And of course, there are some forms of Christianity that would be very closely aligned to what Buddhism says. But there are other forms of Christianity, for example, Puritanism, which valorized fear, which said fear was a good thing, which, you know, in other words, I could be, in that worldview, I could be totally wrapped up in fear and be a virtuous person, you know. And so why is this? And it's, in part, it's because fear is such a powerful tool of social control. It was really used by the medieval church to control people. It was used by the Puritans to control populations. In many ways, corporate America took it all over from the Puritans. Corporate America uses an incredible amount of fear to manipulate and control people. You know, the news is really, it spews, you know, this constant narrative of fear, you know, all the destructive forces, and COVID's going to destroy us, and the race riots are going to destroy us, and, you know, blah, 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 you know, blah, 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 you know. And it's very sad because, how can I say, most Americans, I don't think, find anything wrong with fear. It's been almost normalized in our culture, which is very sad because fear is the opposite of love. And I'll say in particular, it's very tricky when there's a situation when there's both fear and love. And this sometimes happens in a parental situation, a parent to a child. Sometimes it happens in a love relationship, that sort of thing, where it's, you know, I am so worried about what thing could happen to this person I love about that I'm going to be relating to them with both love and with fear, you know? And the fact that I am so afraid and so wrapped up in my fear, some people take that as, well, look, this is evidence of how concerned I am, how much I love. You know, people don't see the problem there. You know, I guess the thought is, you know, if love is a good thing and fear is problematic, well, if there's love mixed with fear, that would be okay, right? And I think I would say, you know, food is good, poison is bad. That doesn't make food mixed with poison an okay thing, you know? Fear always has something toxic in it. And fear mixed with love can be a particularly toxic mixture. Now, when it's something being given to an adult, you know, if that adult has good boundaries, then they can fend for themselves. It can be particularly challenging when love and fear are given to a young child, because young children are kind of designed just to absorb everything that their environment provides them with. And so then they're taking in this worldview of fear as they're receiving love, and it can deeply affect them, you know. And so again, I'll just urge all of you, take a nice deep breath, breathe in self-compassion, self-love. So Buddhism, I would say, offers medicine. And the most fundamental medicine is very simply the breath. When we breathe, so the way that we're taught to breathe in meditation is this long, slow, deep breath. That long, slow, deep breath actually turns on the parasympathetic nervous system. So it turns off the stress system, turns off the fight or flight system, turns on the relaxation system. And of course, that's the way we're told to breathe in meditation, but really you could spend your whole day breathing like that. And in fact, you'd be much, much happier if you did spend your whole day breathing like that, you know? Like, you know, especially the in-between moments when you're going to the bathroom, when you're washing dishes, when you're walking from point A to point B, you know? All those in-between moments, if you can be practicing deep breathing, you'll be in a much healthier place. You're physically, you'll be much healthier, and you'll be in a much happier emotional place just for breathing. I think I would say that in many ways, what we're experiencing in the modern world right now is we're experiencing a culture of love and a culture of fear. And I think, you know, all of us have, you know, some ways that we're more aligned with love and some ways that we're more aligned with fear. But I think there are powerful cultural constructs that are designed purely around love or purely around fear. And I think it can be confusing because, of course, everyone loves their children. You know, everyone loves their spouse. You know, everyone loves the people who are in their own little circle. And the diagnostic question really between these two cultures is, what is the attitude toward otherness? Are others viewed with love or with fear? You know, when we look at other races, other religions, other political views, other worldviews, when we look at behaviors radically different from our own, when we look at people in situations completely different from our own situations, whether it's prisoners or homeless people or immigrants, anything like this, how are we looking at those people? Are we looking primarily with love, openness, curiosity, or are we looking with fear and condemnation? You know, and really all the religions talk about the love that really matters is the love across a boundary of otherness. You know, Buddhism is very clear on this. Christianity is also very clear on this. I mean, Christ says quite literally, love your enemies. I mean, you can't get clearer than that, you know. And so part of the medicine of Buddhism is also about how we relate to our inner otherness, how we relate to the places, because often if I'm feeling lots of fear out in the world, it's probably because I'm not facing a lot of fear inside myself. That fear has been othered in me. And so the question is, can I relate with love and compassion toward my own inner otherness, you know? And often a particular place of fear, I need to go and face it directly and sit with it. And I may feel the fear, I may feel pain, there may be anger that comes up, there'll be some kind of charge that passes through that I have to hold. But after that, it can relax and soften. And then that allows me to open up more and relax more into life. And so it's all a process of relaxing more and more deeply into life, relaxing more and more deeply into love. Now, I think there's this story that we have, you know, sometimes you hear the, you know, relaxing into life, relaxing into love. And the story is, yeah, but if you relax too much, people are going to take advantage of you. You know, you're going to get screwed by the world if you relax too much, you know. And I want to share a TED Talk that I heard that really impressed me. I wish I saw this sometime in the past year, and I wish I could hunt this down again because it was such a good TED Talk. And this woman talked about how, I think she was an anthropologist or something like this, and she went to this tribe in Africa. She was living with this tribe in Africa, and she just noticed that one thing that was characteristic of all the adults in the tribe is that they could totally relax their whole bodies. And they could just go drop into this deeply relaxed place. And from this deeply relaxed place, they would relate to each other. And of course, it was, you know, very loving and playful and fun. You know, they were completely undefended in that place. And so she was watching this and she was kind of impressed by it and impressed by this ability they had just to relax their whole bodies like that. Well, then one day, I guess they were, I don't know, they had to go forage for food or something like this. So she's walking through the bush following a couple of these. They come out of the bush into a clearing, and about 20 feet away from them is a rhinoceros. And the woman panics, like, oh my God, we're done for, you know? But the first thing she notices is that the adults from the tribe, the first thing they did was they just relaxed their whole bodies. And then the next thing that happened is that the rhinoceros relaxed its whole body in response. And then it just turned around and walked away. You know? And it's actually surprising how many threats in life, in the real world, I can neutralize simply by being in a relaxed, open, loving, curious place. You know? A lot of drama that comes at any of us in the world, drama is looking for like someone else to play. I'm going to be dramatic and I'm expecting you to be dramatic back, you know, that kind of thing. And if I'm just open and relaxed and loving, there's no response to the drama and it goes away, you know. And so it actually is, you know, and plus which, if I'm in touch with my own intuition and in touch with my own deeper knowing, probably I'll be alert enough and canny enough to avoid a lot of the people that are trying to, you know, purposely take advantage of me. Probably I'll be more aware of that if I'm relaxed than if I'm in a place of fear, you know. That's the paradox of fear, that if I'm in the place of fear, I'm actually much easier to manipulate, you know. And again, fear damages the very life it's trying to protect. So at this point, I'm going to share the quote sheet. Put it in the chat there. And first, a quote from the Bible, a famous quote from the Epistle of St. John. God is love, and he who abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. So there's actually this classical Christian statement that love and fear are the opposite. This wonderful one from Rumi. If you want the moon, do not hide from the night. If you want a rose, do not run from the thorns. If you want love, do not hide from yourself. Ralph Waldo Emerson, the sage of Amherst, says, he who is not every day conquering some fear has not learned the secret of life. The brilliant scientist Marie Curie says, nothing in life is to be feared, it is only to be understood. Now is the time to understand more so that we may fear less. Joseph Campbell says quite simply, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. Psychologist Abraham Maslow says, in any given moment, we have two options, to step forward into growth or step back into safety. And so it's love that impels us to growth. It's fear that is concerned with withdrawing into safety. Rosa Parks says, I have learned over the years that one's mind is made up. This diminishes fear. Knowing what must be done always does away with fear. And again, knowing what is to be done, knowing, committing myself to a higher cause, that is a profound move of love. And that does diminish fear. Nelson Mandela says, may your choices reflect your hopes, not your fears. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross says, there are only two emotions, love and fear. All positive emotions come from love. All negative emotions come from fear. From love comes happiness, contentment, peace, and joy. From fear comes anger, hate, anxiety, and guilt. It's true, there are only two primary emotions, love and fear, but it's more accurate to say that there is only love or fear, for we cannot feel these two emotions together at exactly the same time. They're opposite. When we're in a place of fear, we're not in a place of love. When we're in a place of love, we cannot be in a place of fear. Maya Angelou says, if we are bold, love strikes away the chains of fear from our soul. The poet Mary Oliver says, when the thumb of fear lifts, we are so alive. Pema Chodron says, the only reason we don't open our hearts and minds to other people is they trigger the confusion in us that we don't feel brave enough or sane enough to deal with. To the degree that we can look clearly and compassionately at ourselves, we can feel confident and fearless about looking into someone else's eyes. She also said, fear is a natural reaction of moving closer to the truth, especially the truth of who we are. John Lennon said, there are two basic motivating forces, fear and love. When we're afraid, we pull back from life. When we are in love, we open up to all that life has to offer with passion, excitement, and acceptance. We need to learn to love ourselves first in all our glory and imperfections. If we cannot love ourselves, we cannot fully open to our ability to love others or our potential to create. Evolution and all hopes for a better world rest in fearlessness and the open-hearted visions of people who embrace life. Don Miguel Ruiz says, death is not the biggest fear we have. Our biggest fear is taking the risk to be alive, the risk to be alive and express what we really are. Marion Williamson says, love is what we're born with. Fear is what we learn. The spiritual journey is the unlearning of fear and prejudices and the acceptance of love back into our hearts. Love is the essential reality and our purpose on earth. She also said, love and fear represent two different lenses through which to see the world. Which I choose to use will determine what I think I see. Brené Brown says, to love someone fiercely, to believe in something with all your heart, to celebrate a fleeting moment in time, to fully engage in a life that doesn't come with guarantees, these are risks that involve vulnerability and often pain. But I'm learning that recognizing and leaning into the discomfort of vulnerability teaches us how to live with joy, gratitude, and grace. Ivan Pozo Illas says, choose what will motivate you in life as a whole. Will it be love or fear that sets you apart in this lifetime? Karma has no hold on our soul greater than a love known as grace, or a fear of sheer torment during this sojourn of our earthly trek. If you choose poorly, then you shall be preyed upon and easily manipulated by your peers via numerous tactics of hate at large. Craig Crippen says, you're being presented with a choice, evolve or remain. If you choose to remain unchanged, you will be presented with the same challenges, the same routines, the same storms, the same situations until you learn from them, until you love yourself to say no more, until you choose change. If you choose to evolve, you will connect with the strength within you. You will explore what lies outside the comfort zone. You will awaken to life and you will become You will become, you will be, you will have everything you need. Choose to evolve, choose love. And John Mark Green says, if you want to tap into what life has to offer, let love be your primary mode of being, not fear. Fear closes us down and makes us retreat. It locks the door and limits opportunity. Love is about opening to possibilities, seeing the world with new eyes. It widens our hearts and mind. Fear incarcerates, but love liberates.